Hi, Priscilla. Thanks for joining the Fruit Street Health podcast. Maybe you could just tell us a little bit about your educational and professional background prior to joining Fruit Street as a diabetes prevention coach and why you decided to get involved in the company.
Yeah. Thank you, Lawrence. It's a pleasure to be here, and I appreciate you allowing me to be part of this. So my original background, I'm a medical doctor by profession, and I graduated from medical school in Ghana about 14 years ago. And I moved, after my graduation, I worked for a while and moved to the US and joined my husband here. And I decided, after different things happened, I decided to move into public health. So I got my master's in public health, and one thing led to the other. I got involved in health promotion, and I just fell in love with the area because I just realized that my passion is to empower people to, you know, to take better charge of their health. So got involved in health promotion, got a certification as a health educator, got some nutrition courses, and I just recently got my certification as a health coach. So this has been my qualifications experiences so far. And prior to Fruit Street, I was involved in corporate wellness, where we, you know, go to different companies in the Silicon Valley area to provide them with different health screening, health education, and just, you know, empower people. Then 3 years ago, I came into contact with you, Lawrence. You reached out to me, and that's where this journey has started since then.
Great. And how long have you been actually teaching the diabetes prevention program for us?
Actually, next month is 2 years.
Oh, wow. That's great. Mm-hmm. And how have you viewed the delivery of the program through telehealth versus maybe in-person programs that you've done in the past?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great question, because this is one of the things that when I first spoke with you, Lawrence, I tried to let you know that this program is really important, because I've been involved in the diabetes self-management program and the chronic disease self-management program. And these are things, programs that were initiated by Stanford in California. I just moved from California to North Carolina. So we did go to different community places to go and, give out this program. It was a 6-week program, but a lot of times people fail to turn up. I mean, it could be due to transportation issue, weather issue, different issues that, you know, hindered people from going through the whole 6-week program. And I thought that this virtual program that people can access, you know, anytime, anywhere, you know, just a click of a button, that has been really positive, and more people have the chance to participate fully once they are, you know, engaged and ready to do it. So that the virtual program has a great, advantage over the in-person because of the reasons that I've just shared.
Yeah, it definitely makes it a lot more convenient. I forgot about the weather issue. If it's a torrential downpour, you probably don't want to go to class.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And do you have any, you know, individual participant success stories without sharing names, you know, just of people that have had great outcomes working with you?
Absolutely. I do have lots of it. And I'll just share one that I happen to write down just to be able to share this. So this is from a person. She graduated last year, April, and she started the program in 2019. And one of the times she reached out to me with this message. She said, "It's not easy to change habits and to stick to them. I'm hopeful though, and I can't thank you enough for the support and push to keep going. I know it's a job, but you've made it genuine, and I'm glad you are my coach." So this was just one thing that really encouraged me, that every little effort that we are making, it's making an impact. And then just 2 weeks, let me just add another one.
Sure,
just 2 weeks
ago,
this lady who also joined this program in June last year, and her situation was a bit peculiar. When she joined, she was in a cast. She couldn't do much, you know, for the first 3 months of the program. And knowing that physical activity is a big part of the things that we promote, she started getting discouraged, especially when we started the Fitbit challenges, which is also another positive by itself. And so I just kept trying to encourage her that, hey, whatever her name is, that it's okay. You can focus on physical activity now, but you can focus on something else, which is her healthy eating. So she just came across and took it passionately. She was tracking her meals. She started with the Share Care app, and then she started one of the other calorie counting apps. She was tracking her meals, cutting her portion sizes, and she kept, you know, anytime she comes to class, she's very consistent. She never misses. Anytime she comes to class, she's like, hey guys, I've decided I'm not going to stop eating everything. I'm eating everything. I'm just measuring it. And 2 weeks ago, she reached out and told me, hey, do you want to see a picture of myself before I started this program in June and now? And I said, absolutely. She showed me her photo and she's lost 62 pounds.
Wow.
And she told me, I mean, this is the best thing that's happened to her life. And she can't thank the program. She can't thank us enough for giving her the support. And she's willing to share her story everywhere. So this is one of the, you know.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. I love hearing those major success stories, right? Hopefully we'll have thousands of them eventually. Yeah. That's very interesting. Yeah. I mean, I didn't even think about that situation of, you know, maybe someone's immobile and they can't even do the physical activity goal for a portion of the program. But that's great that you encouraged her to focus on the dietary component. They always say you can't out-exercise a bad diet anyway. So
yeah. So, it's actually 80% of weight loss is to do with your diet, right? So physical activity is supposed to be just like 20% of it. So
right, yeah. Mm-hmm. And how have you seen the groups interact with each other? I hear a lot about, you know, there's kind of like this sense of community and emotional support amongst the group members that seems to drive some sort of motivation. What do you think about that?
Right. Yeah. It's amazing that, you know, it's built a community. Actually, I just read one of the participants' messages that she sent me a couple of months ago. And she told me to tell the group that she's really appreciative of them for the support that they have in the group. And she feels like she belongs, you know, she belongs somewhere now. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that has facilitated this bonding a lot is the Fitbit challenges that we've mm-hmm. been doing. I usually start off my groups after the fifth week when they do, most of them do have their Fitbit. And it's been amazing. People have been so consistent. Even people that did not come for classes. I have certain people that have stopped coming for their regular classes, but every week they accept the Fitbit challenge and they go with it. And that has increased, you know, increased the bonding and also gives me a chance to, you know, send positive messages. Every Monday, I send a positive mm-hmm. message to the group. And 2 weeks ago, spring was last weekend, right? So I hosted one major weekend challenge for all my groups. I invited 72 people and I had 52 people participating.
Wow.
And it was amazing. After the challenge from Monday to Friday, I could see people were so eager. People were backing up with their steps. So,
right.
So yeah, so the bonding in class has been helpful and the Fitbit challenge bonding has been helpful as well. So,
yeah, I feel like it's easier to skip an appointment if it's like one-on-one with a healthcare provider versus the group. It's like everybody's expecting you to show up, you know, as well.
Yeah.
I was just curious. I mean, you know, I heard some stories about like patients maybe even coming off of medication or avoiding medication. And you know, I mean, obviously you had a great success story with this person losing 60 pounds and maybe you just haven't run into that yet, but have you heard any interesting stories about people coming off of medication? It might just be a coincidence that you have or haven't, but I was just curious.
Yeah, I have heard it from other coaches on our coach platform. I have heard that some people have come off medication, but the closest I can say I've experienced this, people whose hemoglobin A1C has gone down from the, you know, the pre-diabetic range to the normal range. I have people whose blood pressures have gone lower, right? And they need less medication. And even people who are pre-diabetic and who are on the oral medication, the metformin, who are needing less doses now.
Right.
Yeah. So those are some of the positives that I've heard.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the other day I heard there was a patient actually with diabetes that was enrolled that reduced their A1C from I think it was like 7.3 down to 5.4 in 11 weeks, actually. Yeah. So it's interesting because we're thinking about expanding the program for type 2 diabetes to do like a diabetes self-management education program. I mean, what do you think about the group model for type 2 diabetes?
Absolutely. And I've shared this with Rachel before that I really think we should have a separate program for people with diabetes because one, some of the participants that do attend are living with diabetes, right? And sometimes they don't, they want extra, extra support in that specific for diabetes, but we don't have that structure, just for that extra support. But I strongly believe that if we do have that specialized area to meet their needs, it will make an impact. Because when I was teaching facilitating the diabetes self-management classes, it was amazing. A lot of the people, the patients had no idea of some of the basic things they were supposed to be doing to self-manage, because with these chronic diseases, majority of the management has to be self-managed. Yeah. You can't expect your healthcare provider to do everything for you, right? So if they're supposed to be managing this themselves, then they do need that education, they do need that empowerment, they do need the skills, to be able to do that. So I absolutely will encourage you guys to get that going.
Yeah. And I guess from your perspective, I mean, what do you think are the biggest differences between the curriculum for diabetes prevention and type 2 diabetes? I mean, like, is it discussion of medication or amputation risk or other things like that? Or what do you think is the differences?
Yeah. So I think the medication part is a big part of it. You know, knowing when your blood sugar is too, you're going too hypo or hyperglycemic, and what you should do. You know, different things to look out for, and even with the diet, with the meals as well, right? I know people with diabetes may have to, eat a certain frequency per day, and we don't emphasize that in the other program, the prevention program. So there are specific nitty-gritty things that will mean a lot to them. For instance, being able to check your feet regularly to see if you do have any cut or any bruise, right, that should be taken care of, immediately, clipping your nails with a professional helping you and things like that. So those little things are not emphasized in the diabetes prevention, but it's super important for people that already have the diagnosis to get that.
We'll have to have you be one of the clinicians for that product too.
Absolutely. I'll be happy to be part of it.
You know, I've also been thinking about doing something specific for hypertension where you issue the scale, the Fitbit, but also a cellular blood pressure cuff. And then maybe you put the patients on the DASH diet. Mm-hmm. But then I noticed that so many people in the diabetes prevention program reduce their blood pressure. And I just think to myself, should we just be issuing people a blood pressure cuff that are, in the diabetes prevention program? But in some ways, I feel like a specific program for hypertension would be more appropriate. And then maybe we also have like a telemedicine physician to adjust medication, because I feel like that's the issue. I heard a story about a patient. It wasn't a Fruit Street patient, but they had lost 70 pounds and then they passed out on the golf course because the physician didn't adjust the medication because they didn't need much of it.
Yeah.
So I feel like for hypertension, maybe it's like a cellular blood pressure cuff and a dietitian, but also the physician can monitor the medication. I mean, what do you think about doing something for hypertension?
Yeah, I think that is also an important area to eventually add to, right? We're trying to nail down all the common chronic conditions, and we know diabetes, hypertension are the main, things that we're dealing with in the nation and in the world as a whole. So absolutely, if we can have, something like that to help people with hypertension, that should also be considered. But I would say that the diabetes should come first, and then the hypertension can follow, right?
Yeah. No, that's what I'm thinking as well. Let's see. I mean, getting back to the Fruit Street side, I mean, what do you think about the addition of, I guess you talked about the Fitbit already, but you have the scale as well as people can take pictures of their food in the app. Have you found like that to have any impact on the participants as well? Like, do they like using the scale or what do you think about those features?
Absolutely. I can say people are more passionate about the scale than even, just coming for classes. Because I've had people who, one, stopped coming for classes but then I can still see that they're stepping on their scale very regularly.
Right.
And then I have people that at a point in time, their weights weren't changing, right? And we're trying to brainstorm, what can we do? And one of my suggestions was, okay, so if your weight is not changing daily, then how about you kind of tailor it down, maybe just check your weight just once a week. And I was almost like the bad guy in the room, right? It was like, no, we need to step on the scale every day. So I think, you know, it does help a lot. It's motivating to them. People that actually started the class, and I told them, okay, we suggest that you can step on the scale every day, but if it's not possible, maybe just once a week. And one lady was like, how can she step on the scale every day? It's not possible. Scroll down 2 or 3 months later, she's stepping on the scale every day, and she's telling me that is important to her. So, I mean, the scale has been very helpful to them. And the tracking, the food tracking has been very good to them as well. I just had did a mess class with one person who wasn't able to show up for the second class. And at the end of the class, he told me that he's really excited about, you know, using the meal tracking, because he used to use MyFitnessPal before, and it's all about calories, and he realized he didn't have the time to be able to track as effectively, but just taking a photo and seeing that is a visual source of visual accountability for him.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So that has been helpful to people a lot.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's actually a study that shows that even if you do not get any feedback from a dietitian, if you just take pictures of your food, you become more conscious because you have to
think
for a second.
Exactly.
We're also working on another feature where we already have 50% of this feature done, but you know, you can track fruit and vegetable servings, but we actually want to make it so that it's a graph. So if people have a goal of say hitting 4 or 5 servings a day, they could track their progress towards that, which, I mean, I feel like that's almost like the bigger issue than calories in many ways, because, you know, you could eat, you know, a small amount of calories in a day. It doesn't necessarily mean you're getting your fruits and vegetables, which have all these health benefits as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and I just read this article from Harvard just this weekend. And I mean, I subscribe to their health education, whatever. And they were like, you know, it's okay to track your calories, right? But it doesn't give the whole picture. So people shouldn't just, you know, get too focused on calorie counting, because being able to see the food, right, like what we get through ShareCare, and being able to compare it to what, you know, what is the healthy recommendation, that is a big part of the picture. So, and that is easier than, you know, going into your phone app and putting all those details. So I really believe that the picture taken is an important part of the process. And if you're able to add the veggies and the fruits like you're suggesting as well, that will also be very helpful to people when it comes to evaluating their intake. So,
right. Yeah. And speaking of that, one of the new features we're considering working on is basically like recipe recommendations that are culturally tailored, because there was an article in the New York Times about how, like, you know, the American Dietetics Association is very much like the white bread, you know, it's like salmon and vegetables, you know what I mean? But like, what if someone, I mean, pick the culture, right? Indian, Asian, whatever it is, right? They eat differently. Have you noticed anything like that in the program, where maybe people have different diets that don't necessarily fit into like the salmon and vegetable type of recommendation, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Actually, this is a really good point. So, you know, the new dietary guidelines that just came out, the new dietary guidelines for Americans, it's emphasizing the point of, you know, choose healthy foods that are, you know, that you relate to in terms of your cultural preferences, right? So this is one of the new focus of the dietary guidelines. So actually, what I'm planning to do with one of my classes on Wednesday, I did a research. I found this website that is able to, it shows, you know, healthy eating, like the MyPlate, the healthy plate method that we are recommending the program. And it shows it in different different cultures. It's a picture.
I think I saw it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you saw it. Okay. So I reached out to the company, it's a health center. I reached out to them because they said, if you do want it, you should reach out to them for permission. So I went back and forth with a lady. She initially didn't want to give me complete access. I mean, I could get access on the website, but I wanted the actual PDF. And she told me that it's usually meant for nonprofits. So because I'm coming from a profit-making company, they couldn't get it to me.
Tell her we're a public benefit corporation. It's a hybrid.
It's a hybrid, yeah. Well, so she did give it to me. I mean, on the promise that I'm not going to give it out, but I'm going to share it with my class. So I promised one of my classes on Wednesday, I'm going to show them how healthy eating looks like in different cultures. So I think this is something that, I mean, I could give you and Rachel the details to reach out to them, but this is something that will be helpful because we have people with diverse backgrounds that, you know, don't necessarily, you know, see the, as you said, the salmon, whatever, asparagus and stuff, but they can still eat healthy in their context. So it's something that I'm trying to work on with my groups now. Mm-hmm.
No, that's great. Let me know how they perceive that class on Wednesday.
Right.
And I was just curious, how many classes have you taught now and how many participants roughly?
So since I started 2018 and I had two classes and we got done in April, May 2020. I started 2019. I had two classes and we got done in May 2020. And then I started new classes in June, and up till now I have 12 classes.
Wow.
12 classes, and I think if I'm to add everybody, it should be like 100 participants.
Yeah.
Oh, a little over 100 participants,
Oh, that's great, wonderful. Well, thanks so much for your work with Fruit Street, and we'll look forward to having you back on the show soon to share more success stories, and but we'll let you go for today, but thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. I really enjoy this, and I think you guys are doing a great job. So keep up with that.
Thanks.
Thank you, Lawrence.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Digital Health Entrepreneurship with Lawrence Gerard. If you haven't already, take a look at some of our other episodes and leave a review on your favorite podcasting platform.